Welcome to the Mortgage Update with Dan Frio. For over 10 years, Dan has been helping AM 1160 listeners. With so many companies to choose from and hundreds of loan options, the mortgage process can be confusing and costly. Be sure to listen each day for Dan and learn the difference between FHA, VA, and conventional loans. You'll also learn how to negotiate lower interest rates and fees, as well as steps to buying your first home and whether refinancing makes sense. Stay tuned to find out why Chicago's top realtors are choosing Dan Frio.
Welcome to the Mortgage Update with Dan Frio, and I, of course, am Dan Frio. Like I start out every show, please just check me out on Google. Just look up Dan, D-A-N, Frio, F-R-I-O, and you'll find everything you need to know about me. Today, we're going to continue our interview with Matthew Pillmore of VIP Financial Ed. What I want to talk about with Matthew today is those that are looking to get into real estate. I have some aggressive people calling me right now and for the past few months, and they're looking to load up on real estate. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I want Matt's perspective on this. Is it, you know, what's the best way to look at properties? How do you analyze it? Does it make sense? What cash flow do you need? Is there somewhere where you look and check out the appreciation? Just walk us through, Matthew. Give everybody kind of the information about you, a little bit about you, how they can contact you, and then if you would kind of walk somebody through maybe their first investment property, what they should and shouldn't look for.
Hey, I appreciate being back on, Dan. Thank you so much for that conversation during our last show was great. So guys, the easiest way to continue what we talk about today, since the segments are relatively short, is to visit our YouTube channel at VIP Financial Ed. You'll get unlimited content there. Just like Dan, we also have hundreds of videos on our channel. And it's really fascinating to see how things evolve economically. And that's what we really review here. But we've been participating in real estate investing now for over 15 years. I love it. I think it's a lot of fun. I think most people that get involved in real estate do have a love for it. I think you have to, because there's a lot of things about it that just aren't sexy. And let's talk about what's not really sexy right now. What's not sexy is the fact that it's really tough to be a buyer in most areas around the country, because there's just not enough meat on the bone for it to make sense to take the risk. And Dan, you mentioned in our last show that you had over-leveraged, you took a bit of a risk yourself, and the last downturn caught up with you. And even though we're big believers in leverage being one of the most important ingredients to creating real wealth, extraordinary wealth, that is also the biggest danger in creating wealth. Because if things go sideways and catch you by surprise and you're not prepared, well, guess what? You're going to go down. And so what we talk about is always going to be cash flow based. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. Because cash flow is what's left over after all of your expenses have been paid. Okay, so you earn rental income, and then you pay your expenses. And if you have money left over, then the more that you have, the safer you're going to be. The more cash flow you have, the more freedom you're going to have. So we're always looking at the numbers based on cash flow. And I just don't think in most areas of the country it makes sense to do a lot of the traditional investing that we do when the market is better for buyers. And so what are we doing? Well, we're thinking out of the box when it comes to real estate. And I mentioned in the last show, I sort of teased the fact that we had just closed on another property last Friday. And that property is expected to bring in $11,000 in income each month.
I got to stop now, you there. How? Yes, how?
Well, because we're looking out of the box, right? And so one of the industries that has come up more than any other in real estate is the short-term rental market. So this property is going to be a short-term rental property. We'll post it on Airbnb. We'll post it on VRBO, Vacation Rental by Owner. We'll post it on HomeAway, which owns VRBO. And we're going to see what we can get for it. But we've had several mentors and experts come through and look at the property. That's one thing I always recommend, is including a really great team in your decision-making. That's why you have someone like Dan to have conversations with, because most of us are inexperienced about most things. I've never purchased a short-term rental before, so I needed those extra expert perspectives. And those individuals expect the property to rent for $800 per night. Sure. Now think about this. My principal, interest, taxes, insurance, maintenance is less than $3,000. If you add in the utilities like Wi-Fi and gasoline and the gas and the heat and electric and so forth, we're at $3,300 total. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're bringing in $11,000 and still getting to use the property half the time, we can pay a manager to take care of it the other half the time and manage the bookings for us, which costs us 20%. Now, after all that is said and done, we're expected to walk away with somewhere between $5,000 to $8,000 per month in net cash flow. That's our profit.
God bless.
Left over. Yes, thank you. And so here's the thing. Would you rather go out there, scratch, claw, bleed, sweat, and lose sleep over $500 a month if you're lucky?
Yeah.
Or would you rather bleed, sweat, lose sleep over $5,000 to $8,000? Let's 10X the potential here. And so when we're looking at real estate, we're looking at real estate from an out-of-the-box perspective. Now, you may think that that took a lot more effort, a lot more work, but I don't think it did. As a long-term rental landlord, mostly, this actually was just as easy or just as difficult, however you want to look at it, as those other properties, if not easier. And what's incredible about that is this is the very first property we looked at, the very first one we bought.
Wow.
Okay, so that to me shows me, and P.S., a side note that I think is even the most interesting fact about this is the property was sitting on the market for 600 days, Dan. 600
Whoa.
Days.
Whoa.
Which means that for almost 2 years, for over a year and a half, that property was the buyers weren't able, or the sellers weren't able to sell.
Right.
So that shows you that there are opportunities sitting right in front of your faces that we're missing because we're not thinking about things in the new era. It is not just about long-term buy and holds anymore. It's not about fixing and flipping. In fact, I don't recommend anybody fix and flip right now either, because let's say the market does crash. Let's say that in a year it falls and you're halfway done with the project. Let's say that that property is now underwater and you still have to put in $30,000 or $40,000 to finish the flip. Are you going to want to be holding that property when you're done? You still owe more than what it's worth, and you can't sell it. Now you have to rent it, and you didn't plan on renting it.
You're bringing
that
back to me. You're bringing back bad memories. That's exactly what happened with me. And the other side of this, maybe when we come back after the break, and we still have time, I want to talk about how do you property manage these, and we'll talk about that in the next segment. But I'm still intrigued on how you buy this property. So why do you think, what was the purpose that it sat on the market for 600 days? Nobody else thought of this process that you thought of.
Well, because I walked in and the very first thing I asked the seller was, why aren't you Airbnb-ing this? It was the very first thought of, I said, this is a perfect Airbnb.
Yeah.
And she said, what's that?
Oh boy.
It was just a lack of information.
Got
so
it.
It's somebody in their mid sixties, right? They haven't, it is argued right now that the short-term rental industry is in the third inning. It's not at critical mass. It's not like Uber where everybody in the household knows what it is.
Right.
And that is the key here, is that there's still so much opportunity. Will it last forever? No, and according to my mentors, they don't think it's a forever game plan. But for now, for the next 5-10 years,
yeah.
And then we'll have the property paid in full. We'll own it free and clear. If we have to go to a long-term rental, then we can cash flow safely, right? We're never at the mercy of if things change, we can't rent it and still cash flow. What we're doing, though, is short-term renting so that we can cash flow much larger until maybe that train comes to a stop.
Gotcha. That is awesome. That's an awesome story. So, my next question. Well, let's talk about it. So these properties, you said that you're putting through Airbnb and the other outlets, and they take a fee for that. One of the things that intrigued me about your last video is a lady in California buying in Florida, because you would think Florida is a hot market. California, to me, is your prices out there are way too high, I feel, to cash flow. Is Florida a good market? And would you suggest that somebody go that far? I mean, we're in Chicago. So, you know, buying in Florida, to me, I can't see it. I can't, you know, to get there, I can't get there. I have two companies that I run. So I just don't have the time to do that.
Yeah.
So
obviously you can pay to have your properties managed. And the more you pay, the better the management.
Okay.
But you're usually going to get what you pay for. So again, it'll always boil down to cash flow. And I have a great friend. His name is Art Vasquez, and he's done something like 600 real estate transactions over the last half dozen years. And he always says the same thing to me. He puts his hands over his head in a big circle. And he says, you know what the biggest aspirin in the world is, Matthew? You know what the biggest aspirin in the world is? Cash flow. And I say, yeah, that's true. Because look, you think it's a headache until you hire it out. But you have to be able to afford to hire it out. So when you're going and you're fighting in these markets for $200, $300, $400 in cash flow, it's not going to make sense.
Right.
Don't take your hard-earned money and scrape together every last penny to put a down payment on a property that's only going to produce for you a few hundred bucks a month. It doesn't make sense. Now, if you could put together $5,000 to $8,000 worth of cash flow, would you fly to Florida now and then every 6 months?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And so you would probably fly to Denver too. And here's the thing. This market was on the, this property was on the market for 600 days before I came along. You could have bought this property in Colorado, right? So I wasn't anything special. It's not like I beat you to the punch. You could have come in and purchased this and cash flowed it $8,000. And then you could have paid somebody to manage it. The management companies on short-term rentals usually take 20%. So if we could rent it for 10,000 and say, $2,000 goes to property management to handle all the bookings, and then we only owe $3,000 a month on PITI. Well, that's $7,000 left over.
Yeah.
So the management's already built in. That's my profit after I pay the manager. Now, is it completely hands-off? No. Do you sometimes have to manage the manager? Yes. Inspect what you expect, right? Or don't expect it to go perfectly, because if you're not paying attention to it, if you don't care about it, you have to care about it the most. So you need to make sure that every now and then you do actually pay to visit. But the beautiful thing about making $10,000 a month on this property, or $11,000 based on our calculations, is that we get to use the property for half the time.
That's
Would you
cool.
like to come to Colorado every now and then, every month for a week, and have a free stay at your own property and still be cash flowing seven? You're getting paid to vacation. So that to me is so uniquely cool about short-term rentals. And then you can short-term rent your house in Chicago while you're away.
There you go.
And so you're actually getting paid to vacation. This is like what timeshares should be. And P.S., never buy a timeshare.
I'm with you, because half the time I pull somebody's credit and that timeshare's in collection or you know they're not paying or something. So I want to thank Matthew again. Please don't go away. When we come back, I'm going to try to tap into Matthew's brain a little bit on how he's financing these things, how what his down payments are, and how he's getting financing for them. So stay tuned. 2 minutes. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Mortgage Update with Dan Frio. Today we have Matthew Pilmore of VIP Financial Ed. He's a YouTube sensation that I follow, and I hope you follow too. So just go to YouTube, look up VIP Financial Ed, and you'll see him on there. And just make sure you subscribe to him and check out all his videos. So Matthew, buying a rental property, what is your take on how much should somebody have in a reserve account? The first thing I always say is, you know, wonder if your water heater breaks. Wonder if the roof leaks. Wonder if you have no money, then you're really in a bad situation. So basically, what would you say they need as a reserve, if any? And then how are they coming up with the down payment, and what kind of financing do you recommend when you're doing these things?
Great, great questions. Yeah, no, great questions and really good advice too. I think the biggest problem right now is there are many, many companies willing to charge you lots of money to sell you on the idea that real estate is somehow a solution to your cash flow needs. If you need cash flow, real estate is probably not the best direction to focus yet. Real estate is what we call the third corner of the wealth triangle. Now, the wealth triangle is not something that we created. The wealth triangle is something that Dan Locke created. Dan Locke is somebody that we recently had the privilege of collaborating with. But Dan Locke talks about this wealth triangle that just makes perfect sense. And on the first corner, step one, you need to be developing high income skills. Right now, if you're not earning at least $10,000 a month doing what you're doing, you should be exploring other skills that will earn you at least $10,000 per month, period. Now, once you have $10,000 or more per month, buying real estate becomes easy. Okay. What I want for the listener is that you understand that real estate will be your worst nightmare. Real estate will ruin you if you're not financially equipped. Okay, so where Dave Ramsey and I actually agree about things is that that American dream will become your American nightmare if you're not prepared. Okay, and so I look at 20% down. I look at 25% down. I look for, even though 740 is usually the best score you need for lenders and underwriters, as you know, Dan,
yeah.
800. Look, we're trying to make this process a breeze. The property that we just closed on that's going to cash flow that $7,000 or $8,000 a month was such an easy purchase, because we just had tons of money to put down. It just went super smoothly. The credit is perfect. There's no debt. I know Dan has analyzed some of the how to pay off your mortgages in 5 to 7 years. And there's a lot of skepticism. And the reality is, yes, it is less likely than it is likely for people to do this because of our behavior patterns. But the truth is, if you're consistent, this stuff works. And I go into my video from last fall and show how I paid off property in full. Well, here's the thing. I want to pay this house off in full too. We don't have a big first mortgage, $485,000. That's a big first mortgage. The property was $600,000, $610,000 to be exact. So we had to put 20% down, which was over $100,000, almost $120,000 that came out of pocket. So most people don't have that laying around. If you don't have that laying around, again, I would be concentrating my time, my effort, my focus, the painstaking research on how do I make 10K per month? And it's not going to be by going out and buying one property after the next and cash flowing a few hundred dollars. Even if you get $500 a month in cash flow, how many properties do you have to earn or to acquire to get to 10,000? 20? And you have to put 20% down on each of those, even if they're only $100,000 a piece, which most aren't. You have to come up with $20,000 over the course of 20 properties. That's 400 grand. When's the last time you saved $400,000? So again, if I'm going to put in the effort, I'm not going to put in the effort on how do I buy one property at a time for the next God knows how many decades to get to 20 so that I can cash flow 10K. I'm going to go out and say, how do I make $10,000 online like all these other people? Right. And I know it sounds crazy. I know I'm probably not necessarily the most traditional philosophy here, but as a YouTuber who makes millions of dollars a year online outside of real estate and did it within years versus decades, I would recommend people explore that because anyone can do it now. Go figure out how to be an affiliate marketer. Go figure out how to run an Amazon store. Go figure out how to run your own YouTube channel. Go figure out how to be a blogger, a LinkedIn person. I know people on Instagram that are making $500,000 a year. My point is figure out how to make 10K per month. You can spend $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 on products, programs, services, and inventory to do that. And that's what you would have to come up with for one $100,000 property that might get you $500 a month. If you spend $20,000 to make 10K a month, then you go out and invest in your net worth, your equity-based products, your real estate. Real estate comes as the third corner. So it comes, the first corner of the triangle is develop that high-income skill. The second corner of the triangle is scale a business, figure out how to take that 10K and replicate it, duplicate it, you know, delegate out, build a team, have other people doing it for you so that you're just at the top. Now, that is an optional one. Not everybody should be a business owner, but you can take that skill and you can turn it into a business, or you can take that skill and you can bypass the business and go straight into real estate. But either way, you're leading from that first corner to either the second or straight to the third. And if you do build a scalable business, then you would go to that third corner as well, which is real estate. And that's where I'm at. Real estate is easy for me because I make six figures a month now. So it's, you know, I can have a down payment every month. So I'm not, I know it sounds like a big stretch and it can sound overwhelming hearing it, but my point is anyone can do this. I am below average IQ. Okay. I dropped out of college. I didn't have any support. I built it from zero. If I can do it, I promise you any listener here can do the same thing. It is totally possible this day and age and literally years, not decades.
That's great advice. That is awesome. That, right. Again, is why I started following you on YouTube, is because of things like this. You know, many times I'll have people calling me and they're scratching together, you know, what is the minimum down that I need?
Right.
You know, my credit score is 600 and I got to get to this. And they're scrambling and scrambling, but yours completely makes sense. And I agree. I guess I'll be the poster child of the real estate collapse. Fortunately, you know, I've been in the mortgage business for 30 years. I had, you know, I lost over $1 million during that short little time in real estate, but I was able to succeed. I had monies in the bank. I had, you know, great income in the businesses that I have. So I was in that. So I hats off to you, because I agree. Everything that you just said is dead on. So, okay, let's see another question that I could throw at you. So normally, do you, on these properties that you're getting, are you looking for, I guess you are, the conventional financing? Give us the financing piece of things that people, you would suggest or recommend people do use, how they go about it. Because I know you have videos on home equity loans, how to buy, you know, things on credit card, stuff like that. Yeah. So elaborate on the mortgaging piece of things or the financing piece of things.
Okay, so here's the thing, guys. We use a term called debt weapons, okay? And it's a fun term to say. You can try it yourself. Just say debt weapon. It's so fun. Now, debt weapons are tools that allow us to increase our cash flow, period, at whatever level. Anything from, you know, buying Jip Jab to send greeting cards to your friends and family instead of going through the grocery store and purchasing expensive paper-based greeting cards. You pay $12 a year instead of $4 or $5 a card. That is a debt weapon. Another version of a debt weapon might be a balance transfer credit card, where you can take a high interest credit card account and balance transfer to 0% for a 9, 12, 15, 24-month period. That would be a debt weapon. A line of credit, unsecured line of credit, where we can maybe take $10,000 and invest it into a business that now brings in $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 every single month. That would be a debt weapon. A mortgage, buying a property that cash flows $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $8,000 a month, like the short-term rental that we've been discussing, that would be a debt weapon. So any tool, any instrument, oftentimes lending tools provided by the banks are considered debt weapons. So we're using these tools for every example I just gave you is something I've done with these tools in order to create more money at the end of each month. Leftover, discretionary income, discretionary cash flow. Okay, so the more cash flow we have, the more freedom we have. And that's a direct correlation. If you don't have cash flow, if you are spending more than you earn, then you do not have freedom. You will eventually have no choices, okay? You will have a conversation with a bankruptcy attorney. And at the end of the day, these debt weapon instruments, we want to continue to build out. We want to have access to as many of these tools as possible. And Dave Ramsey, for instance, a really popular educator around the country, of course, that teaches about personal finance, does not believe in having access to credit. And he believes in having emergency reserves. Our philosophy is actually different and may come across more aggressive, but I actually consider it more conservative. If somebody has debt, but they have money sitting in the bank, that money sitting in the bank is not earning them anything. When's the last time you were impressed by how much your bank paid you to have money sitting in the bank account? Probably never, which means that having a savings account is putting money aside that is not working for you. Okay, so instead, what we do is we believe in putting that money to work, but we also believe that emergencies can happen, which means you're going to need money for that. Well, if I can say, open up a $10,000 personal line of credit, a debt weapon that is available for use under any circumstances, it's the same as cash. What's the difference between having $10,000 available on that line of credit or having $10,000 sitting in the bank? Nothing. I still have money available if there's an emergency. It's completely liquid. So instead, I would open that $10,000 line of credit. I call that a reserve replacement. Okay, so what I'm doing is I'm replacing the reserves I have in savings, and I'm taking that $10,000 I had sitting in savings doing nothing, and I'm paying off a $10,000 credit card, or I'm paying off a $10,000 student loan, or I'm applying a large lump sum payment to my mortgage and saving massive amounts of interest by doing that and leapfrogging myself down the amortization schedule. But that money is now really valuable to me because instead of earning nothing for it in the bank, I now paid off a $10,000 auto loan and I saved $300 a month. Can you imagine if your bank was paying you $300 a month to have that $10,000 in the bank? Well, maybe you'd keep it in there over 10 years. Well, that whole time they could have been saving $300 a month. Right, that's $36,000
a lot of cash.
In cash flow.
Yep, Matthew, I can't thank you enough. I really can't thank you enough. The person that we've had on the radio station for the last 2 days, Matthew Pilmore, VIP Financial Ed. Check him out on YouTube. He's a YouTube sensation. God bless this young man for what he does, and I subscribe. Can you just let people know how they get a hold of you, how they can find out information about you, and how maybe they can get some training from you?
First step, watch VIP Financial Ed on YouTube. Subscribe. Make sure you check that out. Step two, visit freecoachingcalendar.com and pick a date and time for a complimentary coaching session. I will forewarn you that waiting list for the free coaching sessions has grown to many months out. So just be patient for it. And in many cases, I will be the one that actually makes the call. So don't be surprised if you get the call from me directly and we'll get you jump started. Dan, I just want to say thanks to you as well for having us on. And Chicagoland, thanks so much for listening.
God bless, brother. Have a great night. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, Dan.
You've been listening to The Mortgage Update with Dan Frio. For over 10 years, Dan has been helping AM 1160 listeners. With so many companies to choose from and hundreds of loan options, the mortgage process can be confusing and costly. Be sure to listen each day for Dan and learn the difference between FHA, VA, and conventional loans. You'll also learn how to negotiate lower interest rates and fees, as well as steps to buying your first home and whether refinancing makes sense.